Roan opened the hatch. She pressed her ear against the closed wall of the airlock, then raised the lever on our side. When the wall went up, there was a grinding screech, as if we had sounded a klaxon for the beast to come and consume us. "That should make it come running," I said. Roan didn't answer. We moved forwards, and Mesa closed the airlock and hatch behind us. We headed down the ramp to the intersection with the ring corridor, where we stopped and listened again. There was nothing. "Other side of the station?" I whispered. "Or right over our heads," Roan said, grimly. She turned left. As silent as we could, we jogged spinward, listening for the approach of the maddening choir. We passed Beta Bay and kept going until we reached one of the sites where Roan and the others had been working to cut Gamma Bay free of the Ligurian. Servitors, now inert, had cut a deep trench into the deck and up the void side wall of the corridor. Conduits and cables had been severed and capped. The crew had gone as far as turning off all the life support systems to the bay before the monster had escaped. There was still power running in for illumination. Otherwise, Gamma Bay had become a frozen, lifeless sector. I wondered what would have happened if the monster had waited just a bit longer. If we had had a few more hours, maybe the plan would have worked. Then again, perhaps the beast had always meant to leave at the juncture it had. Maybe the scheme had never had a chance of success. I hoped the new one did. Roan knelt beside the trench. She reached down and detached an explosive charge from inside, removing the remote detonation cable. She moved across the corridor and pulled out another. Then she handed me one of the devices. It was a blocky metal prism about a yard long. There was a trip on one side and three buttons below it. Red, green, and black. "Have you used one before?" "No." "Green primes the explosive." She pointed at the buttons. "Black cancels. Red triggers with a 10-second delay." "Understood." The demolition charge was heavy. I had to lean slightly against its weight. "Running with these is not going to be easy," I said. "I know. If we have to drop them, we will. Better not to." "We could place one near the entrance to the Vizain. Trigger it as we leave."
"All right," she said. "We'll put yours there." She was stronger than I was, and I didn't argue. "We'll keep the other. Try to hold it deeper in the ship if we can." I nodded. "So now all we have to do is find it." My mouth was dry. The thought of deliberately seeking the monster terrified me. It could be anywhere. If it's still following this corridor, it will wind up coming back this way.
If, I repeated. We haven't predicted its actions very well up to now.
No, she admitted.
She looked up and down the corridor. If it turns around, it could cut us off from Beta, I said. Then we would have to circumnavigate the Ligurian. On a journey of that length, our chances would drop to zero.
We'll bring it to us.
Roan started back the way we had come.
We'll bring it to where we want it. We'll draw it with noise.
Unless we already have, I thought. I chose to believe we had not. Except for when it had been motionless in Gamma Bay, the monster had never stopped chanting. Its hymn announced its coming, the fluting of a hideous piper. Weighed down by the demolition charges, we moved much more slowly, but more quietly. The gradual curve of the corridor seemed endless, bulkheads like vertebrae marking off our steps down a path of iron vanishing into the gloom. I strained to hear the monster's song. The background groans and stirrings of the station oppressed me. They were working against us, concealing the approach of the creature. The incomplete demolition work around Gamma Bay had put the integrity of the station under strain, and every time the hull creaked, I thought it was the monster's tread. The corridor curved on and on, the distance to our goal seeming to recede the longer we walked. "It's waiting for us there," I thought.
It's following us through the walls. It will attack just before we're ready, because it is a curse. It is my punishment. It is the hand of a dark god, and it is here to show me, as I meet my doom, that this god, at least, is real. Despair followed me, breathing down my neck. I kept my eyes focused on Roan. She was why I was here. She was why I was still fighting. Survive this, and anything is possible. Win her love again, and everything is possible. Reaching the door to Beta Bay felt like victory. Without a pause, Roan opened the bay. The grinding roar of the door was monstrously loud. We ran inside, making for the gaping hole in the hull of the Cardinal Verzane. We passed by ranks of motionless servitors. Roan had nullified all other tasks during the attempt to sever Gamma Bay. Her control dais was a short distance from the hull, and she stopped beside it. Mechadendrites linked the dais to a dozen servitors. "Keep watch," Roan told me, then put down her explosive and climbed up to the controls. A few moments later, the servitors jerked into action. The mechadendrites withdrew, and the servitors converged on a nearby mound of refuse. Drills and plasma cutters attacked the metal. Fragments of the dead ship clattered to the deck. The din of pointless labour was tremendous. Roan descended from the dais, picked up her demolition charge, and we moved to Beta Bay's outer door. Unlike with the Space Marine's vessel, the opening was at the widest diameter of the iris. We watched the threshold to the bay, our backs to the huge, dark maw of the Verzane. I felt that I was standing on the edge of an immense cavern. If I stumbled backwards, I would fall into a starless void. The metal crashed. Drills whined. My heart beat so loudly it was in competition with the uproar of the servitors. Roan said something I could not hear. "I wish we had a vox," she repeated. I nodded. Was Mesa still in the pod? Had he heard the passage of the monster? Was he on the bridge? I hoped so. Roan trusted his judgment. So did I. Given what we were fighting, that meant little. So much depended on chance. If Mesa was just a few seconds too long in reaching the bridge, then we were doomed, and we had no way of telling him what to do. We did not hear the monster's song. The noise Roan had created to lure it was too great. It arrived suddenly, rushing through the doorway with a slithering lurch. It saw us, and it reared back, its mouth shouting, "Hail!" in unison. Then it rushed forwards. Its jellied body crushed servitors, and its arms flailed at the air like a storm of whips. Roan grasped my shoulder, holding me back until the beast was committed to its charge. "Now!" she hissed, and we turned and ran. A white catwalk led us into the hull of the Cardinal Verzane. It branched over and over again, an iron web extending through the caverns of the huge vessel. Sparse lumen strips lit the walkways, but little else. Hints of immensity surrounded us. The vessel was more than 3 miles long. It seemed much larger than that. Catwalks, ladders, and dimly glinting cables stretched into the ghosts of cargo bays and the traces of decks. This was a monstrous honeycomb of spaces. The walls of some caverns were intact. Others were half-disassembled outlines. The interior of the Cardinal Verzane was interlocking emptiness, a sectioning of void. Roan led the way down the primary catwalk. The demolition charge banged against my leg as I ran awkwardly, an insect suspended in black space. From behind came the bellow of the monster.
"Hail, changer of ways!"
All the voices were in unison, 100 jaws and tentacles screaming in rapture.
The shout rolled into the caverns of the Vizaine. The echoes bounced off concavities. Pendulous halves of walls reverberated with the cry. The ship itself seemed to join in the praise, for it had been transformed, and now, with its dimly seen forms, it could well be a cathedral to a god of change. Divinity snarled in the Cardinal Vizaine, and it sank its fangs into my face. The huge mass of the beast shook the catwalk. Long throats hooted in the eagerness of pursuit. Roan paused at an intersection. "Leave your charge here," she said. I dropped it where she pointed, on the other narrow walkway just past the junction. I glanced back. The monster was visible as a dark, hulking shape, less than 100 yards away, and closing. When it heaved itself past a lumen strip, the pink and blue of its flesh glistened. We started running again. Freed of the encumbrance of the charge, I had new energy and speed. Roan was still in front, still carrying her explosive, and I had to slow down or collide with her. The slithering drew closer. The catwalk shook with greater violence. It bounced under our feet. The railing was a single cable running through poles 10 yards apart. It would be easy to slip and fall through and plummet into the dark. Roan turned right at the next junction. I had to hold onto the cable as we scrambled up towards the mouth of a cylinder, a quarter mile in diameter. At the top, adamantium walls divided the space, rising to a ceiling that was no longer there. Roan hurried along the far right divide, next to the curvature of the cylinder's wall. I had no idea of what the space might once have been. It was an abstraction now, a collection of metal shapes with no meaning, only size, as they delineated space with no purpose. I was growing disorientated, having trouble remembering which way we were heading. We ran straight for several 100 yards, growing tired, the horror eating up the space between us. Then Roan turned right again, passing through a gap in the cylinder and down another swaying catwalk, heading back to the main path. When we rejoined the first catwalk, she stopped. "Keep going," she said. "This is where we stop it." I took a few steps and hesitated. She had crouched and primed the charge. The monster was halfway down the slope to the junction. "Go!" Roan shouted. I obeyed. I headed for the exit, but kept looking back. She waited another few seconds, then hit the detonator. As she straightened to run, the horror sprang forwards, rushing to catch her. Still on the secondary catwalk, it snapped out a tentacle and caught her left ankle. It pulled her down. Roan shouted and grabbed a pole with both hands, holding fast. The seconds counted down. I stopped, horrified. I was too far away to help. I was. If I had run back, I would have arrived just in time for the explosion.
"Change!"
the monster shouted. It reached the intersection. It was not yet close enough to reach Roan with its talons. Another tentacle stretched out for her. 3 seconds had passed. Roan's pant leg dissolved and her flesh sizzled. She shrieked in pain and fury and yanked her foot with desperate violence. 5 seconds. Roan hauled herself forwards with her arms as she pulled. The tentacle slipped down her foot, peeling off flesh and liquefied work boot. Roan shed her skin and the tentacle fell away, clutching tissue. 7 seconds. Roan staggered up, 1 foot a crimson mess. She ran. The tentacles grasped for her and missed. 9 seconds. The monster's jaws gabbled in confusion that its prey should spurn its gift. With a choir of roars, it launched itself after Roan. The demolition charge exploded. The flash lit the interior of the Vizaine in blinding orange. It enveloped the monster and disintegrated sections of both catwalks. The monster fell into the bowels of the ship. Darkness swallowed it, and it sang as it fell out of sight, screaming praise as it bounced and crunched against the vessel's broken skeleton. There was a heavier impact, far down, and then no more. The clanging of falling metal faded, but the monster's song continued. Faintly, the echoes, distorted by distance and the fragmented interior of the ship, the voices crawled up the hall and twisted through the hollow dark. The explosion turned the catwalk into a metal whip. Where I stood, it jerked up and down violently. I fell against the cable and clutched it in a death grip. Roan was fast enough to escape the blast areas, but not to reach safety. The catwalk bucked, throwing her into the air. She came down hard, bounced again, and slid back as the severed catwalk bent down. The cable snapped free of a handful of poles, and the path dipped even further. She scrabbled for purchase. As she pitched off into the void, she grabbed a trailing end of the cable and hung there, dangling, her grip slipping. I struggled towards her. Every step made the catwalk bounce and weave, threatening to throw her off, and I could barely stand. "Hang on!" I called, as if she would choose not to. "I'm coming! I'll get you up!" As the catwalk dipped, I had to slow down and then crawl, making sure of each handful before I made another move. My progress was slow. The endless song of the monster mocked me as I inched through the dark towards the hope of redemption. Roan tried to climb up the cable, but her grip kept slipping, and her movements made the bucking worse. I reached the end of the catwalk. "I'm here," I said. I didn't know how to get her back up. My own position was precarious. The slope was so steep, I had to hold on to one of the poles with both hands to keep from slipping off. I didn't see how I could pull the cable and Roan up without falling too. She was about 10 feet below me, and hopelessly out of reach. She looked at me. She said nothing. I said. "I just... let me try to..." I cast about helplessly. Roan grimaced. She made one more desperate attempt to climb the cable. I wrapped my arms around the pole as the catwalk whipped back and forth. It jerked up and yanked the cable from her hands. She fell in silence.
"No, no, 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 no," I moaned. I peered into the darkness. There were no lumen strips below. There was only inky black.
"Legia!"
I called.
"Legia! Gia! Ia!"
My voice came back to me. I listened for an answer. All I could hear was the distant hymn of the monster.
"Hail! Hail! Hail! Changer of ways!"
Voices, small and great, tumbled over each other, now in unison, now in counterpoint, now in utter cacophony. They created a mosaic of prayer rising from the depths. The monster was far away, and it was everywhere. I did not know if it was climbing or still.
"Legia!"
I called again, and listened again. And still, there was no word. The mad hymn surrounded me. I clung to the pole, motionless and helpless, and at last I screamed,
"Where are you?"
I cried out to Roan in desperation, to the monster in fear, and to the Emperor in agony.
"Where are you?"
The desperation, the fear, and the agony had scraped me hollow. I was a husk, bereft of hope and purpose.
"Where are you?"
Without an answer, I might stay where I was until the darkness took me too. Only the monster replied, and its answer was the same mockery, the everywhere and nowhere song.
"Where are you?"
There would never be an answer, I thought. Then I realized that the silence was the answer. "Where are you?" Nowhere. There was no one. There never had been. And then, from the dark and the deep, came a groan, perfectly human in its pain. "Ligeia!" I cried once more in a sudden rush of hope. "I need light," she called. "Light." I looked back up the slope of the catwalk. "Light, that I could do. I'm going to get some," I shouted into the black. I climbed up the catwalk as slowly as I had descended. Once I reached the level portion, I stood. The crude railing was not to be trusted, with the cable severed at one end. I walked carefully, trying to keep the swaying down. The monster's song followed me. I told myself it was not growing louder, not getting closer. If I believed otherwise, then there was no hope. I crossed back into Beta Bay and broke into a run. I scanned the construction zones and servitors for some kind of light that I could carry. The lumen strips were all affixed to the walls. I thought of a plasma cutter, but doubted the extremely focused beam would do Roan much good. Finally, on the control dais, I found a torch on a rack of tools. I seized it and hurried back into the Cardinal Vizane. The monster's chanting was louder. I froze for a moment, then forced myself to keep moving forwards. Crawling back down the bent catwalk was even more terrifying than the first time. But I managed it. I think that counts for something. I hooked my right arm around the last of the poles. I used the torch to look at it carefully before I trusted it with my weight. It was still firmly attached to the catwalk surface. Then I shone the torch into the dark below. It was the best part of a minute before the beam found Roan. She had landed on a girder about 15 feet down. The girder was about 4 feet wide, a monolithic slab of metal, but a very narrow refuge. If the catwalk had been weaving slightly to the left or right when she had fallen, she would have missed the girder and plummeted into a dark that extended beyond the reach of the torch beam. She was sitting up. Blood from her foot pooled around her leg. "Are you all right?" I asked. "Is anything broken?" "I'm not sure," she said. She moved her limbs experimentally. "Maybe a rib. It hurts everywhere." "Can you move?" "I think so." "Can you climb?" "I'll have to." There was nothing I could do from here. I couldn't get down to her. Even if I could, doing so would serve no purpose. "Move the light off me," Roan said. "I need to see where I have to go." I brought the beam back to where the girder jutted out from a cluster of others, emerging from a partly disassembled bulkhead. The top of the climbable mass was within 5 feet of the catwalk. Roan looked at what rose before her. "I think I can get that high," she said. "What about the rest?" She would still be just below the catwalk, and the gap was too high to jump. "Use the cable," she said. "But wait until I get closer." I held the torch steady. She began to climb. She had to get through a thicket of shorn metal, and the light was hardly adequate for the task. Shadows enveloped the ruin, and she reached for glints and the suggestions of shapes. Her movements were slow and painful. Her left foot was slippery with blood. One careful handhold at a time, though, she made her way up. All the while, I listened to the foul hymn and waited for the sounds of a huge body in motion. At last, Roan was as high as she could go. She wasn't far from safety, standing on the rounded shape that was the trace at the top of the bulkhead. Now, it was up to me. I left her in darkness again, while I struggled with the cable. I pulled the dangling end out through the support poles until I had a good 6 feet of length, more than enough. I threw it to her and trained the torch on her again. As she fastened her grip on the cable, I saw, further below, at the edge of the beam, a tentacle slither around a girder. "Hurry," I said. "It's coming up." She climbed. The catwalk began to bounce again, as it had before when it made her fall. But she only had a few hand-widths to go to this time. Below, the monster's huge jaws rose into the light. Roan's hands slipped once.
She could not use her feet to help, but she clung to the cable with a ferocious grip, and she did not fall. She reached the catwalk. The monster sang and climbed, tentacles and arms seizing metal, propelling it upwards, faster. Roan staggered to her feet and took a limping step forwards. I gave her my shoulder, put an arm around her waist, and we struggled forwards on the bucking catwalk, the chanting of the monster closing in. One last stretch now, a straight line to the exit, and the end of our trial. We were less than a dozen yards from the bay's outer door when there was a roar, and the catwalk heaved downwards violently. The monster was up. The tentacle mouths trilled a song of welcome, and the huge jaws roared,
"Praise! Change! Praise! Change! Praise! Change!"
"Run!" said Roan. She let go and pushed me. The exit was so close. I charged down the catwalk, heedless of risk. Just a few more steps. A few more steps. I glanced back. Roan was running, her face a twisted mask of pain. Behind her came the monster, its limbs snatching at the handrail, its body surging our way like a hideous engine. All four mouths at the end of its long neck were gaping our way. In a few seconds, it would have us. And we didn't know if Mesa was on the bridge. I reached the doorway and jumped aside. Roan was right behind me. The monster's tentacles and arms stretched ahead of it, talons grasping, the circular mouths of the tentacles snapping in hunger. The moment Roan crossed the threshold, the iris of the door contracted. The monster howled. The gloom of the Vizain boiled with the rush of the abomination.
"Zinch!"
it wailed. This time, its prayer was not answered. The door closed with the last second to spare. It severed the tip of a raging tentacle. The eyes on its length blinked once, as if in shock that the beast should fail. The mouth gaped open, and then the stump fell, writhing onto the ramp leading to the door. We heard the deep, heavy grind of the bay's claws releasing the Cardinal Vizain. The bay trembled once, then was still. The mass conveyor was unmoored from the Ligurian. We had banished the horror within. There was one last thing to do. There was a mound of scrap metal beside the ramp. I grabbed two small sheets of metal from the top. I caught the tentacle between the sheets. With my arms extended, I carried it across the bay to the disposal. A weak flouting came from the tentacle, one last refrain of the monster's hymn. I hurled the sheets and the tentacle into the disposal. They would be ejected from the station onto the planetoid below. And now it was done. I had purged the Ligurian of my sin. The three of us gathered on the bridge to watch the end. Roan left a trail of blood behind her, but she refused to go to the Medicaid Center until everything was finished. She and Mesa embraced, trembling with relief.
"You were there for us," Roan said.
"Always," Mesa smiled.
"Thank you."
Roan squeezed his shoulder. I stood a few paces away, the outsider to a comradeship of years. We moved to the consoles and Mesa trained the exterior lenses on the drifting Cardinal Vizain. The main screen flicked from lens to lens as the station rotated, and the mass conveyor moved gradually away. We watched it from the viewports too, a huge shape, lightless, a massive, hollow tomb. Mesa had kept the focus of the lenses trained on the hole that had been linked to the Ligurian. The monster was visible in the pics, a grainy figure of frozen rage. At first it was in the same position, as the pics succeeded each other, motionless, as it had been when Mesa had vented Gamma Bay. Then, from pict to pict, it became diminished.
"It's falling apart," I said.
In one image, a tentacle was broken off, then one of the talons. The lenses captured the progress of the disintegration. It was gradual at first, then rapid. The huge body remained on the threshold of the breach, less of it there to be seen in each pict. It was a husk.
"You have been abandoned too," I muttered under my breath. "Your God has forsaken you."
Finally, there was nothing left. The Cardinal Verzane was the marker of the monster's end, but the corpse was gone. Mesa slumped back in his seat with a huge sigh of relief. Roan at last agreed to go to the Medicaid Centre. It was a small chamber, barely more than a first aid station. The nature of the work on the Ligurian was so dangerous that injuries were either minor or fatal. There was not much I could do for Roan. I wrapped her foot in bandages, and a clotting salve stopped the bleeding.
"You need this seen to properly," I said. "How many days until the discipline's fire comes for you?"
6.
"We'll see if I can hold off an infection until then. I'll probably lose the foot regardless."
"Until then," I said.
"You're coming with me?"
"Yes," she said.
When we returned to the bridge, Mesa concurred with her decision.
"I've been examining the damage we've done," he said. "The Ligurian is unsound. We have to abandon it. We can't continue the work anyway, not with only 2 of us."
"Has there been any response to our messages?" Roan asked.
"No. I've sent another, though, reporting what has happened."
He did not look happy. "How detailed?"
"As detailed as I felt I had to be."
"But no more," I said.
"That's right."
Roan sighed. "There will be repercussions. And investigations," I thought. They would come from quarters not known for their mercy. Roan was leaning against the back of Mesa's seat. Her knuckles suddenly went white with the effort to stay upright.
"You need to rest," I told her.
Her face grey, she let me help her back to her quarters. She fell into bed with a groan.
"Get some sleep," I said.
"I don't know if I'll ever wake. How bad is the pain? I'm not trying to think about it." She took my hand.
"Thank you for being there with me," she said.
I squeezed her fingers gently. My chest hurt with the swell of happiness. I had my redemption.
"Stay for a minute," she said.
I sat down on the cot beside her.
"Of course."
"So," she said, "what will you do next?"
"What I'm told, as will we all."
Even though what I said was a truth that satisfied her, I felt the guilt of evasion. I was relieved she had not asked whether I would go to Age Mortis or whether I would accept my posting. Depending on the outcome of the investigations, I might find myself wishing I could. But those concerns seemed abstract. I was only interested in the short term. We would be leaving the Ligurian together. That outcome was better than anything I had dared to hope for when I had arrived.
"And what of your doubts?" she asked. "Have they been answered?"
I thought carefully.
"I think they might have been," I said.
"What has happened has felt..." I reached for the right word and settled on definitive.
"You accept your calling, then?"
"Yes." The answer came quickly this time. It was a lie. Why did I lie to her? Because that answer was what she wanted to hear. In her state of exhaustion and pain, why would I inflict anything more on her? I loved her. Why would I not give her every comfort that I could?
"You don't like that answer. You think it is insufficient.
Perhaps you're right. We're being honest with each other, aren't we? At least I should be honest with myself. All right, then. I lied to her. And I gave her comfort because I did not want her to look at me again the way she had after I had unleashed the monster. if I told her that I knew now, more than ever, how utterly unfit I was to be a missionary, then I would have undone all the good I had accomplished in the Cardinal Vizain. I wasn't sure if she had forgiven me for my mistakes, for the deaths I had caused. Right now, what appeared to be freshest in her mind was how we had fought together in the Vizain. When she was less exhausted, maybe she would not think as kindly towards me. If there was anything within my power that would regain her affection, then I would do it. I loved her. I told you. Nothing else mattered. The truth was valuable only to the degree that it brought her back to me.
I'm glad, she said. The Emperor has given you a gift. You must use it to the fullest.
My sermons. I couldn't imagine ever writing another. They had rung false to me before, slick exercises with weak or absent conviction behind them. That they were effective made things worse. I took no pride in my skill. All it did was make me a talented charlatan. I didn't think I would face that problem again. What I had seen on the Ligurian had burned away my capacity for pretense. I tried to imagine how I would begin a sermon for the dead of the facility. The only words that came to mind were the fragments of the monster's prayer. I kept my thoughts to myself. I reassured Roan. "If I'm given the chance," I said, "I will use my gift to the fullest. I will carry the word of the Emperor's glory before me."
"Good," she said.
"Good." She smiled and closed her eyes. She was asleep before I left her quarters.
"How is she?" Mesa asked when I returned to the bridge.
"Resting. She's strong."
"That she is. And rest is what we should all do. The station isn't going to come apart while we sleep. If it does, I'd rather it did when I didn't know about it. But no, I think it will hold. We aren't going to put it under any more strain until the Discipline's fire gets here."
"Good. Can I do anything?" He shook his head. He didn't seem unfriendly, but I didn't think he was going to go out of his way to help me feel useful. He stood.
"I'm going to get some rest, too. So should you."
"I will, in a bit." Mesa left the bridge. I stayed a little longer. I walked the circle of the viewports, stopping to watch the Cardinal Vizain. It had already drifted far enough to be hard to make out. It was a darker shadow in the void. I wandered off to walk the ring corridor, trying to ready myself for sleep. I was buzzing from the touch of Roan's hand. My mind was a jittering animal, leaping from joy to horror to anxiety to guilt, and then back around. I tried not to think of anything, and when that didn't work, I tried to focus on Roan's face, looking at me with an expression I chose to believe was affection and forgiveness. Nothing worked. And as I walked past the fissures, cut into the floors and walls near Gamma Bay and near the barricade, the monster's refrain gradually took over my thoughts. "Hail, hail, hail, changer of ways." The words filled my head. I couldn't make them leave. I caught myself walking in time with their rhythm. Hail, step, hail, step, hail, step, changer of ways. Pause, then step. "That's enough," I said aloud. I stopped walking. "No more." I would stay where I was until I could get the song out of my head. "Hail, hail, hail, changer of ways. You are dead and gone," I said to the monster. "Be silent." I shook my head to clear it. Then I realized the words were not just in my head. I was hearing them. "No," I whispered. I had to be wrong. It was impossible. Frozen, breath held, I listened.
"Hail, hail, hail, changer of ways."
The praise whispered out from every ventilation grill. It was faint, sounding as if it had came from a great distance. I felt as if a frozen breath blew against the back of my neck. My skin crawled. The tips of my fingers buzzed with shock. As I stood there, paralyzed and listening, the voices grew louder. The choir seemed much larger than before. There were hundreds of voices, large and small, hailing their dark god. The entire station jerked. The deck canted up one way, then the other. I was thrown off my feet as the Ligurian's grav system struggled to keep up with the sudden changes of orientation with respect to the planetoid. Stability returned, and the deck seemed straight again. I knew the normality was an illusion. I whimpered, dreading the coming blow. I sprinted back to the bridge, the voices growing louder. I could hear them quite clearly now. Mesa was already back at his post when I reached the bridge. Roan stumbled in from her quarters a moment later. "What's happened?" she said.
"Our anchor's been severed," said Mesa. "We're drifting away from the planetoid."
"How?" she asked.
"I don't know. I'm trying to find out."
"Can't you hear it?" I said.
"Hear what?"
Mesa snapped. Then he stopped. "Oh," Roan said.
It isn't possible," said Mesa. "We saw it die."
"That doesn't matter," I said. "It's here." The hymn struck me with renewed power. The monster's god was powerful indeed to call it back from oblivion. My faith in the Imperial Creed was already smouldering ash. I wondered how long I could resist the truth that this creature offered. Mesa reorientated the lenses on the underside of the station, turning them around to look at the Ligurian. The pick screens showed the length of a huge anchor cable descending to the planetoid.
"How did you get back in?"
Mesa swore under his breath.
"How did you get back in?"
"What's that?" I asked, pointing to a chute next to the anchor's retraction shaft.
"The disposal outlet."
"What's wrong with it? It looks ragged." Mesa frowned. He magnified the image, and the ones that came after that, focusing on the chute. It looked more than ragged in close-up. Its shape changed between picks. It was more or less cylindrical in one image, wide open like torn wings in another, then a cluster of waving tendrils.
"That's not metal," said Roan. "That's flesh."
"I don't understand this," said Mesa.
He sounded more brittle than I had ever heard him.
"I threw a piece of tentacle into the disposal," I said softly. "One small piece."
And that had been enough. I tried to imagine how that bit of flesh had achieved what we were seeing. My mind's eye flashed back to the crumbling desiccation of the monster's body in the Cardinal Vizain. I remembered how I had rejoiced to see the monster abandoned by its god, as I had been by mine. I had been wrong. The essence of the beast had lived on. Perhaps its soul, or what it had instead of one, had left the stranded body and been transferred into that stub of tentacle. Perhaps that squirming flesh had been enough in itself to spawn a new body. I could not know what process had preserved the horror. I only knew that it had. Here, truly, was the work of a god. How could one stand against the divine? It could not be done. But I didn't want to die.
"Look," said Roan, "it's spreading."
Tentacles were erupting in spreading circles with the disposal chute at the centre. We stared in silence for the next several seconds as the picks documented the impossible, but undeniable.
"That thing is transforming the station," Roan said.
"Or consuming it," I added. I thought about the way Howson and Kren had been absorbed into the monster's body. This appeared to be something else again. As Mesa fought to squeeze more details out of the picks, the nature of our peril became clearer. There was no difference between the fabric of the station and the body of the monster. They were one. The Ligurian was becoming part of the abomination. This time,
there would be nowhere to hide.
"Can you burn it off?" Roan asked.
"I want to," said Mesa. "I don't think I can."
The exhaust nozzles for the engines were well below the infected portions of the facility.
"The heat might still make a difference," Roan said.
While we stayed at the pick screens, Mesa moved to the command throne.
We watched, waiting for the jerk and the fiery glow of ignition. It didn't come.
"What's taking so long?"
I asked.
"I don't know," said Mesa. "The engines should be firing."
"Look at them," said Roan, her voice heavy with despair.
"Throne, look at them."
They were infected too. It was harder to see at first. I think the spreading, monstrous flesh had only just reached the engines when Mesa tried to start them up. Now, we could see the tentacles emerging from the nozzles. And then the nozzles themselves began to change. They bent and turned inwards. By the time I looked away, the picks were showing enormous claws on their tips. The chanting grew louder, seeming to vibrate from the very walls. Tremors rippled through the Ligurian. I looked out the viewports.
"We have to leave," I said. "We have to leave now."
The monster was reaching from the underside to the top of the station. Its flesh arrived from all sides. Out of our failure to kill the creature had come a thing even more powerful. It no longer had any shape. It was an amorphous, spreading concatenation of polyps and eyes, of tentacles and claws. There was every limb and every organ, and they flowed together, changing from one thing to another in a matter of seconds. Eyes and mouths were one and the same. Jaws gazed back at the viewports. Eyes devoured the metal of the station, turning it into more flesh. A massive hand grasped the docking bay of the tug. The structure collapsed, dissolving into muscle. The tug started to drift away, but a polyp extended from the top of the hand and pulled it into the greater mass. The Ligurian would soon cease to be, and the creature replacing it would devour us.
6 days until rescue, Roan said. We can't take the pod.
The colony ship, then. It and Alpha Bay were still untouched. Gamma was disappearing quickly. The entire extension of the bay was writhing, and everywhere the bruised colours of pink and blue spread like an oil slick. Roan and Mesa shared a look.
"I don't even know if we can get it powered up," she said.
"What choice do we have?" he asked.
"None," she agreed.
We fled the bridge, the tremors growing violent, the entire station being shaken in the jaws of a giant beast. We made for the forlorn hope of the Wind of Faith. Roan leaned on me. She could not place any weight on her left foot without gasping and staggering in pain. Mesa grabbed a plasma cutter on the way out. He carried it as a symbol, like my icon of the Emperor. It would, I thought, be as futile. The cries of the prayer became thunderous as we struggled down the ring corridors towards Alpha Bay. It was a choir of thousands now, hailing change, praising change, welcoming us to the glories of change.
"Embrace!"
the voices shouted in ecstasy.
"Embrace! Embrace! Embrace!"
We had just passed the door to Beta Bay when the walls began to change. The dark grime of iron gave away to the blue and pink of muscle. The walls rippled like drapes, and shapes moved beneath their taut surface. I tried not to look at them, fearing what I would see. I tried to push Roan to move faster and get ahead of the transformation of the wall. It spread too quickly, racing ahead of us, then arcing up to the ceiling. Though the deck was still metal, we were surrounded by pulsing skin. I looked in spite of myself. I saw, in the depths of the wall flesh, as if rising to the surface of a pond, the faces of the lost crew. They were mouthing inaudible words through their torment. Alpha Bay seemed miles distant. The escape pod was closer,
taunting me with its false hope. Kren's face broke the surface of the flesh. Screaming, it plunged from the ceiling ahead of us, at the end of an elongated, scaled neck.
"Embrace!" it screamed. "Embrace! Embrace! Embrace!"
Kren's teeth sank into Mesa's shoulder. He shrieked and tried to yank away, but the neck stretched with his movements, and the teeth were in deep. Blood welled from his shoulder. His flesh began to run like candle wax. Mesa stumbled, and Kren's face pulled him against the wall. Hands emerged and grasped his legs. Mesa looked at us with pleading eyes. Roan reached for him. I hauled her back and dragged her past him. She tried to fight me, but in her weakened state, I was stronger.
"Help me!"
Mesa begged. He struggled against the walls, but tendrils had latched onto him. His back was already being absorbed into the wider body.
"We can't," I said, and kept pulling at Roan. "Let go!" she yelled. "I'm not leaving him!"
"You can't help him!"
I yanked hard and forced her on. Mesa's rising scream of denial and pain followed us. For a moment, its piercing horror drowned out the chanting. It stabbed me to the marrow, and for Roan, it was almost lethal. I felt her hesitate, her feet dragging.
"There's nothing we can do!"
I shouted and urged us on. Mesa disappeared behind the curve of the hall, and the sound of his scream changed. It became hollow and then muffled, as if a huge maw were closing over him. Then it became a horrible gagging as something filled his throat. Then there was only the triumphant song of the monster once more. The hall rocked back and forth, staggering us. The promise of Alpha Bay receded even further. We were less than 10 yards from the passage to the escape pod. Its mirage even more enticing as the station succumbed to the nightmare of change. 4 days, I thought. 4 days. That was how long the two of us would last in the pod now. So close to the arrival of the discipline's fire. If there were only a way to last 2 more days, to defy the tyranny of oxygen rations. But there wasn't. And I didn't even know if the pod was still a pod. A rhythmic chanting began ahead of us and behind us. It sounded like metal being driven into meat again and again, every time the choir shouted, "Hail!" The noise drew nearer from both directions. I didn't know whether to run faster or stop, and I hesitated. The source of the noise came into view from behind first. It was a huge maw, filling the width and height of the corridor, turning the hall behind it into the interior of a throat. Its teeth were needles, densely packed in row upon row, and as long as my leg. The jaws snapped shut, teeth protruding above and below, slicing open the flesh of the faceless mouth. Ichor spewed onto the deck. The mouth opened wide and snapped again, a lurching, unstoppable embodiment of hunger.
"Change!"
the Ligurian now cried to the beat of gnashing teeth.
"Change! Change! Change!"
The word was exultation and command. We staggered forwards a few seconds more, and then we saw another set of jaws closing in from the other direction. The way to Alpha Bay was blocked. We were level with the access corridor to the escape pod. This juncture. This was the worst choice. This is the moment I cannot leave behind. I revisit it constantly. I relive it every night. I feel the agony of that decision as acutely now as I did then. It will be with me always. That is the nature of such ultimate turning points. Truly, I wonder if you would have done better. This was the choice. I could stay with Roan, and we would meet our fate together, or I could abandon her and run for the pod. If I reached it in time, alone, I would have oxygen and provisions for 8 days, more than enough to keep me alive until the Discipline's fire arrived. I loved Roan. I did not want to die. Roan and I looked at each other, and there was judgment in her eyes again. I'm not sure what had summoned it. Perhaps she thought I had been too quick to abandon Mesa. Perhaps she saw me wrestling with the choice. The reason doesn't matter. The terrible judgment was there. That is what matters. If you think it made my choice easier, you're wrong. It was still the worst moment of my life. What that look in her eyes did, though, was make the correct decision clear. I loved her. She didn't love me. Why then would I die for her? No, you would not have done better. I know you would not have. I sobbed as I let go of her waist and slipped out from under her shoulder. She stumbled, steadying herself just before she collided with the straining wall. Mesa's face appeared beneath the skin, staring at her in eager pain. Roan looked at me in silence. She did not beg. She said nothing at all. She did not have to. Not with that terrible gaze. I felt it burn into the back of my head as I turned and ran. I felt it follow me when I turned onto the ramp to the escape pod. The accessway was beginning to change, but there was still metal in the walls here. Most vitally, the airlock wall had not become part of the monster. I felt a burst of hope, though it was muted by terror, grief, and Roan's last look. Though I could no longer see her, I carried that gaze like a dagger in my heart. I still do. Please, 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 I moaned. I opened the panel and slammed the lever up. I was not praying for the Emperor's mercy. I might have been praying to the perversity of the galaxy. I might even have been praying to the monster, for it had become my world now, and in its immortality and omnipotence, it was close to a god as I could imagine. I might not have been praying at all. Chance favoured me, and the wall rose, revealing the unchanged escape pod. Roan screamed as the door went up. She screamed with anger and betrayal as well as pain. I gasped at the sound, fumbling with the pod's hatch. I was relieved when the shriek ended and the thunderous chant of
"Change! Change! Change! Change!"
spurred me on. I opened the hatch, then turned and pulled the lever on the inside of the airlock, bringing the wall down. When it met the deck, the change reached it. Metal became flesh. Roan's awful face came for me. I cried out, hurled myself into the pod, slammed the hatch shut, and punched the launch button. The jerk of violent acceleration hurled me against the control console. I struck my head and fell unconscious. I was helpless then, but it didn't matter. I had escaped. You would not have done better. I'm glad I survived. If I had to make the choice again, I would do the same thing. But I regret having been forced to do so. I never wanted any of this to happen. I mourn for the dead, and especially for Roan. Their memories live on with me. I carry their faces in me. This, too, should count for something. It must. There was a promise I broke. I never preached on the Ligurian, as Howson had asked. If I had the chance now, I would have something to say. My sermon would come from my soul. I would speak with the force of conviction, because I no longer have any doubts. I would speak of monsters, and destiny, and change. I would teach fear, because I have learned its true measure. I have learned to fear the reality of a true God. I have learned to fear the changer of ways.
Silence, Part 4. Maricus tugged open his robes, exposing his neck and chest.
Can you see them? I can't see them, but I can feel them. I thought I escaped, but I think I was wrong.
He looked down at himself and slumped against the bier. As he did so, there was a horrible clattering of bells and a shrill whistle shriek. Valimar's hand fell to his sidearm as the mortuary servitor loomed suddenly out of the mist. It blared wordless chastisements, and Maricus flinched away from the bier.
"More of them,"
Venderson said. Valimar turned. She was right. They came out of the mist, swaying on stick legs, shrouds rustling, bells clanging. Golden faces glared down at them, and his head was suddenly full of pain. He staggered, clutching at his skull. It felt as if it were about to burst. The servitors were talking among themselves now, ignoring the people scrambling beneath their feet. They threaded among the nearby biers, checking the bodies. Valimar reached again for his pistol. He wanted to shoot them, but couldn't. Could only watch as they pulled back the closest shroud, revealing...
"Oh,"
Venderson said softly. He turned, but she was no longer there. Instead, she was on the bier, her flesh lacerated, her eyes wide and staring. Valimar staggered back and tried to grab Maricus, but the missionary was gone as well. Valimar caught sight of something that might once have been a man, slumped on another bier, flesh twisted and pulsing with slack faces. Valimar spun away, not wanting to see. A shadow fell over him as a mortuary servitor leaned close, red gaze boring into his own, just as the colonel's had. Valimar backed away.
"No, no, no, no."
The edge of a bier dug into his back. A metal claw fastened on his head and forced him around. Forced him to look into his own eyes. Into the raw red hole between them, where the colonel's aide had shot him dead. He wanted to speak, to beg forgiveness, to beg for help, but he no longer felt the God Emperor at his shoulder. He felt only cold stone pressed against his back, and the pain in his head growing, swelling, filling him and emptying him all at once as the world spun away. And then, finally, he felt nothing at all. That was The Wicked and the Damned, written by Josh Reynolds, Phil Kelly, and David Annandale. Narrated by Doug Bradley, John Banks, Emma Gregory, and Richard Reed. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2019.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.